Hello and welcome to the Contracting Officer Podcast. You're listening to the podcast for people who want to learn about the government market from the contracting officer's perspective. If you are a contracting officer, we hope to give you a little more insight into industry's perspective. In today's episode, Kevin and I answer a listener's questions about the government's evaluation process. This is the first of what we hope will be many direct responses to the feedback we've received on the website. All right, let's get started. Hey, Kevin. Today we're going to cover listener questions. This is going to be fun. So we got some questions from Randall about what really happens when the government evaluates proposals, and we hope to help people understand at a top level what goes on behind the scenes. So some of the things that are talked about today: subjectivity in scoring, why past performance is used, what does significantly more mean in the evaluation terms, and do evaluation factors favor one proposal?
These are big questions, so we'll try to cram them into a small podcast.
All right, so Randall's first question says he's looking for information to help understand evaluations and scoring, particularly when it is other than a clear and objective thing being measured and evaluated. And I got to say, evaluations are largely subjective. It's hard to help understand how things are actually evaluated behind the scenes, because it depends on the individual evaluators and how they interpret what Section M says, what the evaluation criteria say, versus how you as the proposal writer might interpret them. That's why sometimes if getting the best thing ever made isn't your concern as the government, you might use a pass-fail criteria where you say it has to meet this threshold. If it's 1% better than the threshold, that's fine. If it's 100% better than the threshold, maybe I don't want that, because that sounds like it's going to cost a lot more to get that. So how it's evaluated, they're going to tell you that up front in Section M, but it's hard to say exactly. That there's not a point system behind it where the evaluators can say, well, this is worth 92 points and this is worth 4 points. And there's a lot of subjectivity involved. Did I say that right?
And this is a touchy one, because I've had several debates with people about this quest for standardization of source selections. Is everybody thinks, oh, we can just make it so much easier if we just standardize everything. Well, that's not necessarily, in fact, I argue that it's not a good thing, because you want that subjectivity. You want thinking people doing these evaluations. The definition of thinking is the evaluation process. It's going to be subjective. It's supposed to be flexible. If we want LPTA, most people don't want LPTA. And LPTA, by definition, is inflexible. Well, the reality is we're all sitting on the industry side saying, we think LPTA is a bad idea. We shouldn't do it that way. If you like subjectivity, this is how it plays out. It is very hard to say, yes, we're going to win this one if we say this, because you don't know necessarily who the individuals are. You don't necessarily know how this word's going to come across. And that's why, I mean, this is the art of proposal writing, is what we're really talking about here, is the subjectivity of when we give our case, you need to sell it under the context of what they said they would evaluate. Yep. So one of my favorite parts about this question is that it brings into clear focus the difference between the quest for standardization versus the quest for flexibility. And there's always going to be tension between those two. And so how do you basically understand, I guess my short answer to this one is, understand what does the RFP say you're going to be judged on? And if you don't clearly know that it's going to be largely subjective, you got a problem. And then if you know it's going to be largely subjective and you didn't target the agency well, you got a bigger problem, because now you don't know how they're going to be, you don't know how they're going to judge you. And that's, you heard the one about targeting. This is yet another reason why it's so important. If you don't understand the VA is going to read a certain sentence a certain way, they're going to read it differently than NASA. That's a stupid example, but it makes the point. You need to understand that the person who's reading this, is it a program manager who is working for the Department of Defense, who's been to Iraq and Afghanistan and knows exactly that your product will or won't work? Or they a person that has never actually been in combat and they're looking at it from, well, does this thing just do what we need? Those are the kind of questions that if you don't know the answer to them, you're going to get a different evaluation than you think.
All right. So let's lead this into his next question. So, and as by way of example, regarding subjectivity, what makes somebody's past performance blue while somebody else's is green? And second part of that question is, can two members of the evaluation team come to different conclusions? Well, the RFP should, in Section M, give specific descriptions of what makes something blue or yellow or green. So maybe this isn't past performance that I'm talking about, but RFP should say something like, a proposal that has one or more significant strengths and no major weaknesses is blue. If the strengths and the weaknesses balance out, then we rate it green. It should have some kind of guidance like that. So for past performance most of the time isn't rated as strengths and weaknesses so much as relevance. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and that's the question is a little bit confusing because colors usually refer to the technical approach, management, that kind of stuff, whereas past performance is it recent, relevant, et cetera. So it's easier to meet the recency part, right? In other words, if they say it has to be done in the last 5 years, okay, that's an easy one to meet. But the relevancy can get fuzzy because now you get into, well, was it with the same agency? Was it for similar? And I'll say things like, is it similar in complexity? And so define complexity in, again, they may define it, but for the purposes of answering this question, complexity means if it's a 5-year contract with 100 people in 7 different locations, all providing, medical staffing services, and you've only run, your past performance is one contract with 15 employees in one location with no subcontractors, it's not as complex. Or if you have one that is, yours is, it's all the same company. They're all the same labor category doing the same thing, but they happen to be in 7 different locations. One evaluator is going to say, well, they've managed people in different locations. They understand how to remotely manage employees. And another evaluator is going to say, yeah, but they're not different types of employees. They're all admin versus being admin, medical, HR. Yep. See what I'm saying?
And one person can say, hey, 20 people isn't very complex, but 50 people is complex. Another person could say, well, I think 40 people would be more complex. There's lots of different opinions that come into it. So to answer the question, can two members of the evaluation team come to different conclusions? Yes, they can have different opinions on it. But in the end, there is a proposal consensus, and in large source elections with lots of different evaluators and advisors, there's actually consensus sessions where the decision makers get together and they decide what the rating is, and they listen to the different members of the evaluation team, listen to their different opinions, and then everyone has to come to agreement on, yes, this is what we're going to rate this particular factor.
And the big takeaway here is, remember, all of those opinions come from your proposal. So remember, you have to tell this story to say, this is why we think our past performance is equal in complexity to what's in the RFP.
Yep, and it's got to be, it's like you said, it's what you wrote. Even if that evaluator knows more about you, they can only evaluate what's in the proposal and the feedback they got from past performance questionnaires and all that stuff. So this leads us to the next thing. Next question from Randall. Why use past performance? As is commonly said, past performance is no guarantee of future results. And that is absolutely true. Past performance is no guarantee of future results. But I think we all use past performance in our personal life all the time. I think the concept still adds value. It can't guarantee success. What were you going to say?
Yeah. I wouldn't say that past performance is no guarantee of future results like they do in the stock market. I would say that it's a smaller guarantee than we think sometimes.
Yeah,
and I just want to make sure that the words we use matter, right? And so when somebody takes a soundbite out of this podcast and says, oh, yeah, past performance is no guarantee of future results. Okay, that's not true. In most circumstances, for a service contract that requires individuals to be managed to do labor and whatnot, like, you know, grounds maintenance. If you've never done grounds maintenance before, I have zero confidence you can do it. If you've been doing it for 20 years, I'm pretty confident that you can maintain the grass on our base.
Yep. So if you're on the industry side, it's your job to show the government how your past performance is a guarantee of future results. And if you're on the government side, it's your job to ask the questions of how is what I'm buying now different than what is being used in these past performance examples so that you can gauge the risk of, is this going to give me any confidence in future results?
And here's the the third piece of the puzzle here is your ability to stitch those two together given current circumstances.
Yep.
So I just read a blog post of, I don't know, like a month ago or something. It was talking about service contracts that have been, they're being recompeted. The last time these service contracts were awarded was 2010. It was right after the Great Recession. Lots of people were looking for work. Government had money. We had two wars going on. It was basically the opposite of what it is now. Right now, government's not spending as much. The commercial market has kind of taken off. The recession is, I guess, technically it's ended. But I mean, the point is the commercial economy is on a growth spurt. It's 180 from what it was 5 years ago. So for you to say, what I did back in 2010 is exactly what I'm doing now, really? Because the rest of us are paying attention that the world's a little bit different. But at the same time, you have to show how am I going to take that past performance and stitch it to what's your actual requirement right now? So for example, the contract requirement may have shrunk. Like for operations and intel contracts in Iraq and Afghanistan are smaller now than they were 5 years ago for lots of different reasons, right? So for you to say, I can staff up 500 people in the next 6 weeks, well, the contract's only for 100. So you got to show how does that past performance relate? And this goes back to A, targeting, and B, learning how to tell a story in a proposal.
Yep. It's your job as the offeror. It's your job to convince the government that your past performance is relevant. All right. Enough on that one. Next question. How much is significantly more, as in the sum of the non-price factors is significantly more than price, is worth significantly more than price in the evaluation? So that's a really tough question because it's completely subjective. It's meant to be flexible because you don't want to inadvertently lock the evaluation team into an answer that doesn't make sense for what they want to buy. So you can't, there's not a formula of it's twice as important or it's 0.35 more important. There's going to be a rough idea on the government side of how much more important it is, but it's meant to be flexible so that they can make those trade-offs. And the closer the evaluated technical and the solution is in evaluations, if everyone is roughly equal in that, well, suddenly price becomes more important. And I've actually seen some RFPs lately that say just that as the evaluation of the non-price factors, as those are evened out, price becomes more important, which is exactly what happens. If you're given roughly equal choices, well then, you know, saving a few bucks is going to be important to you. But if one is much more valuable, you might not be interested in saving a few bucks if you can get a better solution.
And if you've been listening the last 10 minutes, you know what I'm going to say. If you're targeting the agency, you're going to know, or you're going to have a better idea. And so then the other part of this that you may not know, if you listen to one of our previous podcasts, we talked about this is company specific. So how you write your response to the RFP should to some extent rely on what your strengths are. Like what's your win theme? What makes you uniquely capable to win this work? So significantly more important than price. Let's say they say past performance is significantly more important than price. Now we're back to that conversation of, well, how relevant is your past performance? How well can you write to that story of our past performance? The things that we do is exactly what this contract is for.
Yep.
In that case, when it says significantly more important than price, you're hanging your win on that to oversimplify.
Yep. And if your management strategy is only slightly more important than price, you better spend most of your proposal writing about past performance and not your management strategy.
Yeah, very good point. And then, you know, the other part of this is that as a contracting officer, as a program manager, as a source selection authority, as a person who is making the decision, you want as much flexibility as you can get away with. Because I don't want to, as the user, I don't want to get handcuffed into having to pick somebody that I don't want. Or, let me rephrase that, pick somebody I don't want as much as the other guy. And that's why this is, the terms are fuzzy on purpose.
Yep.
Is that if you're the person, if you're going out to buy a car, if you're going out to buy, I don't know, you're going out to hire somebody to manage your house or to build an add-on to your house or something, right? Same concept. You may not even tell them this, but in your head, you've decided that their past performance or their proven ability to build a phenomenal addition to my house on schedule, on cost, is more important than the actual cost, because I don't want people trips into my house for an extra 6 weeks. So that's in your head, right? Well, it's the same thing. You want the flexibility to decide at the last minute, you know what, but this guy's, I don't know, 20% cheaper. I'm going to get over it. That's the flexibility that we as humans and be as business people crave. Well, this is how.
Yep. But you have to write that flexibility into the RFP, because you can't decide at the last minute that you want something that you didn't describe in section L and M.
Correct. But you want the flexibility to decide. I said this is more important than price, but for 20% more, it's not that much more important. Yep. See what I'm saying? You want that flexibility. Yep. And if it's 5%.
Yeah. And what I was going to say is, don't worry, Randall. You have to justify why you make those decisions of, hey, I've decided that it's worth paying 20% more for this extra capability. It's not just a wake up in the morning and decide that kind of thing. There's some paperwork involved.
Yes, lots of them that go listen to the, there are many of them. We talk about the value of documentation.
Yep. All right. So last question from Randall. Are evaluations often revised so that a favored contractor is an awardee? For example, if Blue is originally 100 points and 100 points is not disclosed to industry, maybe it'll be rescored as 120 points if that benefits the favored contractor. So in theory, this can't happen. In reality, let me phrase it a little differently. So previous episode, we talked about how industry's job, you're trying to shape the RFP before it's released, so that the evaluation criteria favor your particular solution. So that's separate. Once you get to the evaluation phase, do some of the evaluators have biases? Absolutely. Can they revise their evaluation? So if the whole source selection gets done and you find out that offer B wins and the acquisition team really wanted offer A to win, can they go back and revise it so that A wins? God, I hope not.
Yeah, how about this? My answer to this question is, this is what you think is happening. I've been accused of this a couple of times during a debriefing. You say, why don't you just tell me you wanted them to win from the beginning? And my honest answer, because they were just frustrated, and I didn't get spun up on that particular statement. But the honest answer is they want it fair and square. This is your perception. So I would argue, I know people are going to disagree with me, and as you all know, I'm okay with that. I would argue more often than not, this is how it feels, or this is how it looks. But let's not be naive here. This probably does happen here and there. But the reality is, to restructure the entire evaluation so that one company ends up coming out ahead after the evaluation has been done that's a tall order.
Which you get slaughtered in a protest if
right,
because the paper trail is there.
And it's conspiracy theory 101, because basically what you're saying is, okay, the contracting officer, the source selection authority, assuming they're not the same person, the program manager, the customer, the lawyer, all of them have conspired to rewrite the entire source selection plan after we evaluate everything. That's a tall order. So, okay, let's be cynical and say on a smaller one, this might happen. But again, it's not supposed to. And if the whole process, going back to, listen to the time zones process, if everything is being as much as can be done properly the first time, this isn't an issue. Because by now, the company who really has the biggest advantages has been involved the whole way, has written the requirement so that it limits it to them and a few other of their stronger competitors. The contracting officer is only going to get 3 or 4 really strong proposals, and the company that they want is any one of those 5.
Yeah. So I got to say, people do have favorites, but the evaluation process doesn't let you award to your favorite. It only lets you award to who does the best job of satisfying the evaluation criteria. One of my very first source selections, the users absolutely wanted one product. That's not who won. And they were heartbroken. And they actually did everything they could to try to justify why the one they wanted should win. But you couldn't. It did not work out according to the evaluation criteria that they helped write. And you know what? Their non-favored contractor is the one that actually got the award.
And I've got a couple of examples like that. And the big takeaway is that the company who won performed very well to the requirement.
Yep. So did everything we asked for.
Right. So it's, yeah, this is this is like a 2-hour podcast of all the strategies behind it.
No, it's not. Five questions from Randall, five questions semi-answered in a short period of time.
That's right.
All right. So that's our first listener questions cast. We look forward. We have a lot more listener questions in there. We just picked these to start with. We look forward to more questions. Hope we can give you quick, short answers. And also, this is great reminders to us that we have not covered some topics in the depths that we need to. So we'll have full-length podcasts on some of these same topics in the future.
And so the standard follow-up to our conversation today is we need your engagement. So look us up on Twitter, go to LinkedIn, and send us your question. That's how we got these. And we're here to help people. And that's the whole point. So, and then the big favor I have is ask that you write a review on iTunes, because that's how people find us. And you hear me say it a lot of times. There are lots of people that can use this information, and we're giving it away for free. So please help them find it.
Yeah. If the podcast has given you the information you need, if it's proving useful, that's great. If you want more help, you can always look us up, contractingofficerpodcast.com/training. And for direct support, you can always go to skywayacquisition.com. And this is where you can get into webinars or personal one-on-one help with acquisition topics. All right. Thanks a lot for being a podcast listener. We really appreciate it. And I'll talk to you later, Kevin.
All right. Have a good day.
Okay, that's it for this week's episode. As always, if you have questions, comments, or complaints, go to our website at contractingofficerpodcast.com, hit the contact button, and let us know what you think. Thanks for listening.